Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
The chance to fly high, dream on. One of the things I'm going to start out with today, for those who haven't been here before, I do have a mission. My mission is to support tens of thousands of people just like you that are listening, find their gift and bring it to the world. And how I do that? We do that by discovering and delivering our authentic self to the world. And once we're able to do that, then everything else kind of falls into place. Today, first of all, a lot of things have happened. I want to demonstrate this. This is a promo for my wife. She invented this. This is a mask that you can use that has like a clear thing, so you can see your lips move. I thought, people are creating a lot of interesting things. This is a world and kind of an intro to the show. A lot of things have happened just in the last 2 weeks. I mean, we're in the midst of a pandemic. People are dealing with the virus. We've been home along so long that people are now starting to come out. I know out here in California, restaurants are open with like 50% capacity. The good news is my gray hair will go away tomorrow because our hair salon is open tomorrow. So there's some good things are going on. The other big to-do is the challenge with George Floyd and injustice, the refreshing of our memory of how unjust things can be. And that has caused a lot of challenge. And in times like this, I think all of us are struggling with what is this world that we're in? What's going on? There's a lot of what I would call challenges. My mother would call them problems. She and I disagreed a lot about the word challenge. She thought they're not challenges, they're problems. Whatever they are, I call them challenges. There's a lot of things going on. And interesting today, I have two fabulous, fabulous guests. Dr. Alan Lykin and Harriet Tinka are here. Part of the reason I brought them to the show is that in this time where we are jumping over hurdles and overcoming obstacles, these two people have incredible stories of overcoming some incredible challenges. A lot of you who've been around my show know, but if you're new to the show, my kind of little gift and challenge that I had is that I grew up for 50 years as a tall, white, college-educated male military officer and pilot in the United States Air Force. And then I made a little change, and I've experienced a very different world as a transgender woman in America. That alone has its own little challenges, and I like to bring up how I overcame those. But today I want to focus on these two people. Dr. Alan and Harriet have a book. In fact, we will talk about it as we get close to the break, but the book is called The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life. Hey, I like the title. Two survivors reveal 13 golden pearls, and we're going to get into that. Probably in the first half where I want to talk about their story. In the second half, we'll talk more about their book, depending on how the discussion goes. But so with all of that being said, I welcome you.
Thank you, Dr. Alan Lykin. We're glad to be here.
Good to have you. Now, one of the things that, tell them where you're from. Because I always think this is fun.
Harriet, why'd you go ahead?
We are from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Canada. Now, here's what I know about Canada. My son, his wife, and our two grandchildren live in Vancouver. One time when we flew to Vancouver, they flew us over to Calgary, and then back down. And so when I looked up where Edmonton is, and Calgary's like way up there. Edmonton's like way above that. So now, temperature wise, are you out of the freezing zone yet?
It varies with the day, but today it's a beautiful 68 degrees Fahrenheit. It's sunny, it's warm, it's dry. It's a beautiful day. Days like today are just perfect.
Well, it's interesting. I had a friend of mine coaches down in Texas, and she was talking about how, well, you know, it's going to get up to 90, which is going to be really hot today, but, you know, we're going to survive it. And I'm thinking, man, I would love to go down to 90. I live in the desert. This is the time where it's like 110 during the day. So 90 seems like, you know, get out the coats for us. So let's start with this. Part of what I think is really important and what I want to bring to the audience today is this idea of we're overcoming obstacles. And what makes your story so great is each of you have an incredible obstacle that you overcame. So I want, before we delve into how that happened, if each of you, and I'm going to start with you, Alan, if you could tell your story, sure. And then we'll hear Harriet's story so that they have a background for where we're coming from when we start talking about this.
Well, I was a world-renowned cosmetic doctor, and back in 2003, I had taken a vacation. I went to Disneyland with my dear wife, Lucy, the happiest place on earth, just outside of your doors there, and I was walking with her. It was late in the day. It was hot, and it was sticky, sort of like the day you're in right now, and my wife turned to me, and she said, "What's wrong with you, hun?" And, you know, for once in my life, I hadn't said anything wrong. I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't even thunk anything wrong. So I was taken aback. Yeah. You know, if you've been in a relationship for a while, you know those things happen. But the point is, she was concerned. And I said, "Really, dear, I don't have the faintest idea what you're talking about." She said, "Listen to your foot." And I said, "Oh, my God, listen to my foot." And so I was walking along, and all of a sudden, my foot had developed a foot drop on the right side, and it was slapping against the pavement with each step that I was taking. Now, your brain is programmed not to do that. Your brain is programmed to lift it up with every step. So there was something wrong. And I said, "I really don't have the faintest idea." And she said, "Did you have a stroke?" And I said, "No, dear, you're a doctor. You know a stroke doesn't present this way." Well, then she said, "You know, when we get back, you better get this checked out." Now, when your wife says that in that tone of voice, you know you better follow the advice. So I did exactly like I was told, and I had every test known to man. I had brain scans. I had CAT scans. I had scan scans. Yeah. And you know what they showed at the end of the day, Laura?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. The doctors were perplexed. They were befuddled. They didn't know exactly what was going on. So I had more tests and more tests and more tests. And then I ended up on the doorstep of a world-renowned neurologist. Neurologists are supposed to have all the answers. They're supposed to have it all together. So I went there. And this neurologist said to me, "Dr. Leica, sit down when I'm telling you this." I said, "What do you mean? I've got a dropped right foot." And he said, "No, you don't. You have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And in 6 months, you're going to be dead. Get your affairs in order." Wow, that hit me like a ton of bricks. I didn't know what to say, but I shot back. "Is there a way to prove this?" He said, "Of course, an autopsy."
Oh, great. Oh,
okay. Well, then I shot back. I shot back again. "Well, I'm not going to die to prove you wrong." You know, so that started my journey. I started looking for answers. And, you know, when you go through something like this, you go through a grief reaction, Laura. You go through anger. You go through denial. You go through bargaining. You go through depression. And you don't do that in planned stages. They all come at you at once. Your brain flips from one to the other in a second. And you're really, really going through this. And these are the phases that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said in her book, In Death and Dying. And it's famous for this because these are the phases people go through when they're going through a death reaction. And so, you know, the only thing I wouldn't go through is acceptance. In my heart of heart, I knew this wasn't the right diagnosis. I knew there was something wrong with it. So
back then in 2003, I started to look around and they had just invented something around that time called the internet. You might have heard about it.
A weird little thing
that really wasn't amounting to much. They didn't think it would be. You had to use dial-up connections.
I love that. It makes that really funny little sound, right?
Yeah. And then you used to have to use a language called DOS to get on because there wasn't enough memory in our computers to do very much. So I had geeks that were friends, thank goodness, and they helped me get on. And I looked up every disease that looked like ALS but was not ALS. And I found a doctor in Colorado Springs, Colorado, that was going through exactly what I had gone through. His name was Dr. David Martz, but he got worse much more rapidly. He got to a phase that he was on his deathbed. Now, this doctor was so well known, doctors from around the world were coming up to say goodbye to David. And a doctor came up from Texas. There's Texas again. He came up from Texas and he said to David, David, I think there's something wrong with your picture. I don't think you have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. I think you have something else. David whispered because he couldn't even talk at that time. He said, what do I have? The doctor from Texas said, well, I think you've been bitten by a tick. I think you have something called chronic Lyme's disease. It mimics every other disease known to man, he said. Now, if I'm right, I'm going to start you on treatment and you're going to get better. And you know what happened, Laura? Just like Lazarus, he arose from the dead. He literally became back to his regular self within a very, very short period of time. Now, I heard about this and I knew I had to get in touch with David. So I phoned every hospital in Colorado Springs and I got in touch with him at the Methodist Hospital. And, you know, I started talking to him and he said, you know, Alan, something's amazing here because I've started a clinic that's treating people with this weird disease. And I have over 2,000 patients just like us, he said. I said, really? I said, can I come down? He said, of course. I said, when do you want to see me? He said, immediately. I said, David, I can't. This is our Thanksgiving weekend. There's no way my wife's invited 50 people around. I can't go down. He said, aren't there any planes in Canada?
Well, we did have one.
Yeah, we do have one. Maybe I could get it. Maybe I could. And so I got on the plane, got down to Colorado Springs, and there was David on the tarmac to meet me. He literally was there to greet me. Now, it was such an amazing thing. We talked for hours, and he said some magic words, Laura. He said, I think history is repeating itself. And he started me on treatment, and I maintained my status as a top cosmetic doctor for over 30 years. I was, but you know, when you go through this, your life changes, Laura.
I want to stop you there for a second, because there's a couple of things that I want to bring out of that story. First of all, I absolutely love your story about the internet, only because when I'm giving my seminar and telling my story, part of my story involves me being on the internet in this chat room back when you had to dial up and you had to go to a site and stuff. So everything that while you're doing that, I was in a chat room finding out about being transgender. So that was interesting because that was an interesting time. But the piece I want to go to is a couple pieces. So many people in this world are given interesting circumstances. Both of you have been given interesting circumstances, and although some things like maybe a car accident or something happen quickly, one of the things I find interesting is this kind of this story where, you know, hey honey, your foot is like, what? It's like, yeah, you know, you're right. That, you know, that's kind of, now you got it in your head. Ooh, something's wrong. Was it a stroke? Oh my God. Me? Oh God, I don't think so. You know, now all of a sudden your head is spinning with these, like, I wonder what it could be. And then you go through all the tests and the CAT scans and dog scans and every other scan. And they still don't know. And you're kind of like, no. And then for this guy, I have to say, I have a lot of interesting stories about bedside manner and doctors. It's like, well, I want to be honest with you. You're going to die in 6 months. It's like, don't tell me that. There's better ways to do that. But what I want to get at is take us through a little bit of your wondering and then concern and then, ooh, now I'm really starting to get worried and then I'm going to die. I mean,
well, you know, here I was. I was top of the career back in 2003. I was just sailing along. I was doing fantastic. And all of a sudden, this ton of bricks hits me. You know, all of a sudden, within an instant, my life had changed. This doctor was telling me that I'm going to die, that my life was over.
Yeah, that's like
that's it. You know, I have 6 months, this limited time frame to do anything. So that's when you start really to wonder, you know, did I live? Did I love? Did I really matter? And what if he's wrong? What if this guy who has no bedside manner is wrong? You know, maybe he's just full of himself. Maybe he just, and I couldn't help but reconcile myself with the fact that this diagnosis was so blatant. It was so harsh. And yet he couldn't prove it. He just was putting some of the pieces together. And, you know, doctors pigeonhole things a lot. We you know, being a doctor, I know that if it looks like a dog and it barks like a dog, it's probably a dog. But it could be something else. And we know many times that diseases are not black and white. They don't jump up and down and tell us what they are. We have to really play the part and figure out what they are. We have to be the Inspector Clouseau of the game and really look under every stone to figure out what's going on. And that's what life actually is about, is figuring things out. And so I became my own person searching for an answer. I was on a quest. I was going to find an answer. And lo and behold, I was able to find it.
Yeah. One of my mentors, Mary Morrissey, when she was young, she talks about doctors. One of the paradigms that we have of doctors, and you are one. So, I'll relate to this is that we see a white coat and we see rock solid answers, and we think that medicine is an absolute science, and that if this guy did the three tests and you have Lou Gehrig's disease, you have Lou Gehrig's disease. And I have to say, a lot of people, you may have seen this, a lot of people would just say, oh, okay, I'm going to die. And then they'll just get ready and they do die.
Well, the reason why I say this story is because I have seen a lot of people diagnosed with weird things and they just buy it. And I always tell them, please seek out a second opinion. Please look around, because doctors are not infallible. Doctors are not always right. You know, we play the odds. We think things are things. And in some cases, we do have a definitive test. But in a lot of cases, we don't. And at the early phases, diseases do not declare themselves. They really do not tell us what they are. They really have not got the faintest idea what they are. So yeah.
Well, and it takes a different kind of mindset as a physician to be able to tell your patient, these are all the things I know, and these are the things that we know for sure, and these are kind of the things that are not so sure, and this we really don't know about, and we should get some more information, maybe talk to another doctor, see what that is. But one of the challenges, my wife comes from a medical family. Her brother's a doctor. She's a pharmacist. And they all were in the medical field. And you kind of get to that feeling where, you know, you've worked and worked and worked and worked to become a doctor, and you've studied so much. Very similar, I have to say, to pilots. I went through pilot training, and it's so, so hard in the military that by the time you get through it, you think, man, I can do anything. And if somebody says, well, what's this? You just say that. It's that. And it was like, oh, okay. You know, it's hard not to get wrapped up in the ego of thinking you know everything definitively. And that's kind of a hard thing to overcome. let me pause there. And Harriet, let me ask you this. We've got about 6 minutes to the break. Is that enough time for you to start your story? Or do you want to wait till after the break?
Sure, I can go through it.
Okay.
Go through the short version.
Okay, well, because this is going to generate a lot of interest because your story is much different.
Mine's much different.
Mm-hmm. So give us your story. I'll give you a little warning as we get close.
Okay. I'll go with a short version so that we have enough time to talk about it. Now, even today, it's still surreal for me to believe that I'm a domestic violence survivor. So here I was, an international model, walking the runway full of confidence, yet I was a victim of a stalker. So my story begins when I had just retired from the modeling industry, and I decided to go get a formal education. So I enrolled into the university, and it was at the university that I befriended a fellow student whom I had no idea that his attraction to me was a psychological trap that would end up being deadly. And I was your typical domestic violence victim. I was young, naive, and I didn't know the signs of an abusive relationship, but yet I was vulnerable enough to trust him. So I got to know him and we became really good friends, and he became very abusive. He'd yell and scream, even hit me. But then later on, he would apologize. So I thought, oh, life is good. He apologized. Let's carry on with our relationship. So I was confusing that abusive relationship for love. And it gets so bad that I decided to seek. I went to the police and asked them what to do. So they recommended a restraining order. So I got the restraining order. And what a restraining order does, it stops the stalker from coming anywhere near you. So I was quite happy. I went on with my life. I thought, hey, life is good. So it was one evening that I was just working on my project. I looked at the time. It was late. I put my things and I decided to go home to get some rest. So I walked into the elevator and I was busy looking in my handbag, not paying attention who was in the elevator. So it was all of a sudden I felt somebody grab me by my neck and almost choke me. And he was screaming, saying, how dare you put this restraining order against me? You know, I'm the only man who would ever love you. Nobody could ever love you as much as I love you. And I started to scream. So he got really scared that somebody might hear me. So he took off his shoes, got a socks and stuffed it in my mouth to shut me down. So I gagged. It was disgusting. And I ran out of the elevator, but he followed me, dragged me into the vehicle. And he drove as fast as he could, yelling and screaming, being very abusive. So we kept driving, and all of a sudden we got to a really isolated area. It was probably like an hour from where we came from. And we saw a telephone booth. So those booths were quite available.
Back in the day.
So he saw it and he said, you need to go get out of the car and call your parents and say goodbye to them, because this would be the last time that they would ever hear from you. And I said to him, well, no. And he got quite upset. And he said, okay, I'm going to ask you one more time. In the back of the vehicle, I have a rope, a knife, and gasoline. I am going to wrap your body up with this rope, cut your body in pieces, and set your body on fire. Now, are you going to call your parents and say goodbye to them? I looked at him again, and I said, no. And he got even more upset for the second no. So he reached over on the glove compartment, he grabbed a knife and he stabbed me twice on the leg, and there was blood gushing everywhere. And it was so bad that I don't even remember how I got from that point to the hospital. And when I woke up, there was the doctor, the media, they're all waiting in the waiting room. And the doctor told my father that I was lucky to ever, if I'll ever walk again, because there was so much damage on my leg. So it would take years to learn how to walk. Or if I ever walk, it would take a long time. So when I had the news, it was so depressing. So here I was, I'd been a model walking the runway full of confidence. And now I was depressed and a cripple. So the only thing that separated my confidence and my depression was my trauma. So I started feeling sorry for myself, saying, why me? How could this happen to me? I'm a good person. You know, you go through those emotions and you're asking why this happened to you. But I had to start getting physiotherapy. So it was during physiotherapy that the details are in the books, but a little girl came into my life and she was there asking why I was in the hospital. And I told her my story in a version a 9-year-old could understand. And that's when she told me that I needed to use my story to inspire the world with my trauma. And I didn't really know what she meant. And life is about connecting the dots. So when she said it at that point, I didn't really know what she meant. I thought, maybe what's the wisdom behind this little girl? So I found out she was in a car accident and she was motherless, fatherless, and homeless. She had been paralyzed and she'll never walk again. Yet she had so much joy and gratitude. So it was at that point that I thought, wow, my story is nothing compared to hers. But life is not about comparing stories. It's about what you do with your story. And everybody who's been a victim was a dreamer. So I had to get through that and get over the pain and heal. So that's when I discovered the secrets to living a fantastic life through my trauma.
Okay, can I stop you there? We're going to come to a break, but I wanted to make sure that we went long enough to hear the ending of the story. And these stories are...
Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Yeah, yippee-skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com. It's time to shake out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance through joy and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
Living a richly abundant life sound too good to be true? Listen in to Richly Abundant Women with Julie Steelman on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Embrace a vibrant future of breaking free financially and creating a richly abundant life filled with prosperity and growth. To learn more about Julie Steelman and Richly Abundant Women, visit www.juliesteelman.com.
For stimulating conversation and keys that will change your life, tune in to Dynamic Destiny with Coach Pete every first and third Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Pete to get clarity for your calling and practical wisdom for results. For more about Coach Pete, visit PeteCoaching.com. That's P-E-T-E Coaching.com.
Are you ready to become an unstoppable force of love in the world?
Then don't miss the Creative Empowerment Show, Invoking Radical Love with Rachel Chase, live every month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Rachel shares tools, stories, and meditations to spark the flame of profound wisdom within you. If you want to awaken your superpowers and activate your heart, visit RachelChase.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is Laura Meeks. You're on the Laura Meeks Show. We do this every second and fourth Wednesday at high noon here in the Pacific. Out in California is where I'm at. Today we have Dr. Alan Leica and Harriet Trinka. Am I saying that right?
Trinka, okay. Yes. Yeah. Like Tinkerbell.
Like Tinkerbell. I spelled it wrong in another place. This has got me confused now. One of the things that we talked about for the break, so if you were here for the first part, you heard Harriet's story. And when Harriet and I were talking during this week, we were talking about setting up the show. And one of my challenges in life, when I was a young man, I was potentially going to be drafted and go to Vietnam. And there was a movie called The Deer Hunter that was out, and it just put into my mind that this was going to be a potentially tortuous scenario where people could chase after you with guns and possibly kill you. And so there were kind of these fantasies running in my head, or fears, nightmares about a situation very similar to yours, Harry, where here's a guy where, he's kind of abusive. Okay, now we got a restraining order. Part of what I want to get across too is that in these kind of situations, and I'll have you reflect on this, the first time it gets a little challenging, it's like, well, they apologize, so I guess we're okay. And then you kind of go down the road. And so where I want to go with this is you're kind of going down the road, and the hurdle is getting a little bit higher as time goes on. Then all of a sudden he captures you. He's stabbing you. You're bleeding. He tells you, unbelievably, call your mother. You're going to die in this incredibly gruesome, nightmarish way. So what I want you to do is go over there and call your mother. And you made the statement, no, I'm not going to do that. And that, to me, is an important part to share with our listeners, because part of what happens is your ability to find your limits. Truthfully, some people, you argue once and dates off, we're not going to date anymore. Others of us have more tolerance, and then there's some time where you have to say, wait a sec, how far down this road can I go? And in that really critical life or death scenario, you said no. Reflect on what got you there and how that changed the scenario.
Oh, you bet. I think I had been in an abusive relationship for so long. He had been hurting me. He had been calling me names. It was getting to a point where I couldn't take it anymore. So I got to my boiling point. And when he asked me to call my parents and say goodbye to them, I said, no, I'm done with you. I'm not going to take this anymore, because the abuse was just going on for so long. So I got to my boiling point. I said, enough is enough. I will not take it anymore. Even if it cost me my life, I'm done. My parents taught me to really stand up for what I believe in and really have that integrity and dignity no matter what. So that's what I was doing in that moment. And I didn't know how strong I was until that point when I said no.
Well, and that's another really key point. I came from, and one of my latest rants is about white male privilege, Alan. Some people know it. Some people know they haven't. Some people they don't. I honestly didn't really realize what that was. But your ability to stand up and say, okay, this is it. This I'm kind of done. I've reached my boiling point, and okay, now here I am. This is who I am. It's going through those scenarios that you all of a sudden realize the power that you have, that how powerful you could be, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it does. It really kind of makes you realize you're much stronger than you really think, that you give credit to yourself, until you get to the point where you're suffering. And that suffering makes you realize the suffering is there to teach you a lesson. And the lesson was, I am strong. I'm resilient. I can't take it anymore. You need to stop what you're doing and just respect my feelings and just know that I'm human, just like you are. So that's really what I found out about myself.
Now, the one piece we may have not made clear yet is that you did survive it, obviously, here on the show.
I did, yeah. Right? Yeah.
But where we landed the story, he stabbed you, you're bleeding. You said no. How did you get to the hospital? How did that happen?
Actually, I don't know how I got in the hospital, because the hospital staff told me that I was just, somebody dropped me off in front of the hospital. But I actually just recently, I looked at my newspaper clips and I found out that he had actually driven me to the hospital. And I found that quite recently. I didn't know this because it's been.
Oh, yeah. Well, and in the book, and so let's transition to the book. Between you, Alan, and Harriet, you guys have two interestingly different stories, but you collaborated on a book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life. Let's talk about that book, because as heartfelt as these stories are, and we all, in essence, all humans have a story of their life, this story of overcoming obstacles got you to sit down and actually collaborate and write a book. So it must be important, right?
So yeah, I think the important statement is, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens. That's our commonality. And because of that commonality, we were able to find some amazing things in life. We were able to find these golden pearls in our common pathway. And that's what we collaborated on, putting those together. So our story is one of going through some catastrophic times. But you know, it's the catastrophic times that define us who we are, that makes us stronger in those times. It really is what makes us better for those times, even how terrible they are. And I bring that to today's society as well, Laura, how times are so terrible, yeah. Of all this strife and all this hardship, all of this disease and all this racial, you know, but at the end of the tunnel, there can be a better time than we have now. We can have a better and that's what Harriet and I found. And that's what I'd like to hold up to everybody, is that it doesn't matter what happens to you. It's what you do with what happens is really the important statement here.
Yeah, I can't, I would print that on the top, because it's true for me and it's true for you guys. And just to take it to the wider scope, I wholeheartedly agree. Within the New Thought era and the training that I've had, one of the things I believe in is that we collectively have created a scenario, and the scenario, whether it's the pandemic or the racial unrest or whatever it is, those are things that we can use to either get better or to get worse. And I think a part of what your book is saying is that there are ways to use these challenging situations that you've had to really jump higher. True?
Yeah, and I'm just going to, before I let Harriet take something away here, I want to just say about these golden pearls. You know, the reason why we came up with golden pearls is because they're formed from hardship. An oyster makes a pearl because it's being traumatized inside its shell. So it walls it off with this beautiful material called luster that makes it beautiful. And there are golden pearls in this world. They exist in the southern Philippines and the Indonesia area, but they are so rare. a solitary pearl can sell upwards of $10,000. Now, what Harriet and I did was we found some golden pearls in life. And I'm going to ask Harriet to speak on one in particular, something called forgiveness, because forgiveness is one of the most important golden pearls anyone could ever have, ever in their life. And Harriet, could you please tell us a little bit about forgiveness?
Oh, you bet. Now, I think when something like this happens, the trauma that everybody goes through, not everybody, most of us, like me and Dr. Leica, went through trauma. The biggest thing is forgiveness. And most of us are told you need to forgive so that you can start healing very quickly. And that's not really true, because forgiveness is not a natural emotion. We're not born to forgive. We're actually born to hate. Hate is a natural emotion. And we use hate to really protect those that we love. And people say, oh, I don't want to hate. But really, the definition of hate is it's an intense dislike for something. When people say they don't want to hate, really what they mean is I don't want to get angry, because anger is more it's reactive. Hate is more proactive. And we use hate to describe, to protect what we love. Like you say, I hate cancer because it's killing my father. So for me, when I wanted to learn how to forgive, I had to use three steps. And these are the steps, they're not really in the book. These are the steps that we use in our seminars to help people learn how to forgive. Now, step number one is say the reason you hate. So for me, I had to say, I hate my stalker because he put me in the hospital. I hate my stalker because I have a scar on my leg. And then step two, change that last sentence to love. I hate my stalker, but I love being healthy. I hate my stalker, but I love my perfect imperfections. And then the very last step, get rid of the hate and focus on the love. I love being healthy. I love my perfect imperfections. So you start using these three, the love journal. You say it in the morning and in the afternoon. So you keep saying, I love being healthy. I love my perfect imperfection. I love my life. It turns into a love journal. So just doing those three steps will really help you forgive.
I love that. And I'm going to use that. It's interesting because in my training, in my background, there is a big difference between focusing on the negative or focusing on what we might call the positive or the love side versus this other side. Mm-hmm. And in so many ways, part of what you were saying too, one of the things that I try to tell people is that, you know, the stuff that has happened to you is in the past, mm-hmm. and we're looking this way. We don't. Yeah, I was trained in college. I was a psych major, and one of the things that kind of struck me about psychology is it's all about looking backwards and trying to figure out if you could put the blocks back together and figure out why the blocks got put into that order. And as a life coach, I'm thinking, okay, I'm not really sure or care. Not that I don't care, but that's not my focus. My focus is where are you now? And then where can you go? But I love how you've broken it into a three-step process, because it's often hard to make the jump when you have somebody. And again, I think people listening wouldn't you say that it would be somewhat challenging to forgive your attacker? Because it is so dramatic and brings up such incredible visions in my head. Mm-hmm. I don't know about others. Yeah. That it in so many ways, it would be challenging. Now, in my life, one of the things I thought was kind of funny, my mother and I had a real head knocking relationship in the middle of our lives. And there was a time where I just couldn't forgive her. And I would tell the story over and over again. In other words, you know, the story of your attack, it would be very easy for you to just to tell this whole story of attack and how that's ruined your life and how that's kind of describes where you are and why you're the way you are. And, you know, then I went to alcohol and drugs. And it could be the story. But the story you chose was, no, I'm going to write a different story. One of my seminars is called Writing the End of Your Story. And you have purposefully said, okay, I'm not going to be the victim story. I'm going to write another story. And this is a great kind of a three-step way to write that story. So you kind of start with, this is it. And this is kind of the middle step. And then now I'm putting that back here, and now I've got this. I'm going to go forward.
I'm going to interject this for a second, Laura. Sure. You forgive not because the other person needs the forgiveness. You do it for yourself.
You're right.
And I think that's the most important thing. So go on that theme a little bit, please, Harriet.
Yeah.
Yes, because when a snake bites you, it's not the bite that's going to kill you. It's the poison. So you need to get rid of that poison. Because sometimes you get so angry, and it's like you holding this water bottle. Like imagine yourself holding this water bottle, maybe 2 liters. You're holding for 1 hour, 2 hours, 5 hours. So at the end of the day, it's your arm that's going to feel the pain. The water bottle is still the same. It hasn't moved. So you need to make your hand a little lighter by letting go. So when you let go, you can feel so good about what has happened. Just it's a relief. Like you feel so like a renewed, like a whole new life. It's not easy though. It's really tough, but once you know, if you don't journal it, it's not easy to know what you're hating for. You need to write it down.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it for me is you know, part of it's the awareness. I got to a spot where I was telling this, that when I graduated from pilot training, my mother came down and caused a whole challenge. I was the commander at the time, and she had a vision of kind of officer and gentleman, and we actually were going to be like, you know, getting drunk on beer and diving on tables, and it just really wasn't a match. But I found myself telling this story over and over and over again until one day, like 2 years after she died, I'm thinking, am I still telling that story? Like, she's dead. Why am I telling that story? Which brings the awareness back to me. It wasn't her story. I wasn't trying to help her. You know, that kind of is what you're saying. Forgiveness is helping you. Mm-hmm. This is to help you. Alan, give me one of your pearls. We got 5 or 6 minutes left.
I would like to just spend 2 minutes on the word enthusiasm, because enthusiasm is one of the game changers that can change everything else. And I have a short story that I'd love to share with
you. Okay, great.
There was a carpenter by the name of Fred, and he was tired. He was finished. He had worked for the same company for 35 years. He didn't have that enthusiasm anymore. So he went to his boss and he gave the keys to the boss saying, I'm done. I'm out of here. The boss was taken aback. He said, oh, Fred, don't do this. I have one more job that you need to do for me. You know, just one more. Could you please find it in your heart to do so? And Fred said, of course, boss, I'll do anything for you. You've been good to me. This has been the only company I've worked for. It's been great. So the boss said, okay, build me just one more house. Only you can do it because you're my master carpenter. Only you have the skills to do it. So Fred begrudgingly said yes, but his heart was not in it. He barely got the job done. He'd work 2 hours a day, whereas in the old days, he'd used to work 12 or 14 or 18. He barely got the job done, and it was done with shoddy workmanship. And when he was done, it barely passed inspection. But he went to his boss when it did and said, okay, I'm done. The boss said, hold it, Fred. Just wait. I'm going to call everybody around. Everybody, this is Fred's last day. It's a momentous occasion. He's been my best carpenter. I wish everybody was like him. And Fred, I've got a special gift for you. Here's the keys to the last house you ever built. I want to enjoy it with all the enthusiasm you brought to work every day. Enjoy it as a perfection of your life. But you see, Laura, that's what life is all about. You have to bring enthusiasm every day. You can't do it when you want to. You can't do it on Monday. You can't do it on Friday. You have to bring it with every task you do, because that enthusiasm carries you through the times when you don't feel enthusiasm. It really helps you in all those times that are bad.
Yeah. Well, and there's a little ring of truth to fake until you make it. It's the enthusiasm that creates it, not the thing creating the enthusiasm. You know, often we think, well, I'm going to be so happy when I go on trip. But it's not the trip that makes you happy. It's the idea that you're going on the trip and then you're on the trip. that's interesting. Before we get too far, let's talk about talk about your book and how they can connect back to you. And then we can use what time we have left so that I don't miss out on this. How where can they get your book? And how is your book doing?
Well, our book became a number one international bestseller last week, and that was just from the pre-sales. So that was amazing to see how that had happened. Now, they can get it two ways, at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, but I'd prefer them to get it from FantasticLifeBook.com, because then I know who bought it, and we want to do something special for society. We want to give 20% of the proceeds to the society to help women's shelters in your area to help people with the ending domestic violence, because we think that's very important. And if you buy it through that link, then we can find out who bought it so we can give the proper contribution to back.
Oh,
20% of the profits of a book is large part, as you probably realize. But we want to do that to end this tremendous violence. Now, in addition, we'd also like to give something special to your listeners.
Oh, great.
We'd like to give them a golden pearl a week for the next 52 weeks. And all they have to do is text us the word golden pearls, the word pearls with an S, to 1-819-717-2515. That's 1-819-717-2515, and we will give them a golden pearl a week for the next 52 weeks.
Awesome. Awesome. Can I do that?
Yes, you sure can.
Hold on a second. Let me get my phone. There's a ringing already. I was like, they must be calling now.
And they can get in touch with me at Dr. Ellen Lyka, DrAllen Lyka, LYCKA. com, and they can get ahead of Harriet at her fight. It's like, Harriet, tell them how
okay,
to.
Okay, Harriet, jump in here. We got.
Mine is www.empoweredme.ca. So that's empoweredme.ca, and we teach all the tools that I mentioned, like forgiveness. So we do seminars to help use the golden pearls to have a fantastic life.
And we are professional speakers as well. So if anybody needs us for the virtual podium out there or the real podium, either together or alone, we're happy to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that, just for the audience sake, one of the things that we were talking about amongst ourselves is that each of these stories we can talk about for hours. And so we're going to make plans to bring each of them back by themselves so that now that you've had kind of like the overall taste, I'd like to do a deep dive with each of these guests so that we can really kind of concentrate, because it in so many ways in 1 hour, there's just time just like zips by and we just get like this smattering. It's like, oh my God, I need some more. Of that. So we will bring more. We've only got about a minute left. And so I just want to take this time to thank you both for coming here. I've read the book and I love the book, the pearls that, and plus I'm just going to give away a secret. There is an extra pearl at the end of the book. You get an extra bonus. These people are very giving. So, And it definitely is a great read, and it does talk about ways that each of us can improve the situation that we're in. You know, again, my mission is to help people improve their lives. I think we all have a gift. Your gift is clear. The challenges that you've been through and your ability to then take that out. Harriet, I know that you're also involved in empowering women. True.
Yeah. You bet. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there, you know, there from these experiences, circumstances comes the next jump up. And I think that's an important part. So for all the listeners out there, I appreciate you coming to our show. Again, hang tight. Look on my website, flyhighliving.com, and we will schedule these two guys back. In my screen, you're kind of like over there. Yeah. So we'll get you guys back. So that sadly is going to end our time. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Laura, thank you. Okay. It's been our pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having us from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Harry. This is the Laura Meek Show. Come back and join us. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday the 24th. And I'm going to have, we're going to talk about the challenge of the pandemic and the other social issues that are going on. So that's what's going to happen. With that, I leave you all. Fly high, live adventurously. This is Laura Meeks on The Laura Meeks Show.
You've been listening to The Laura Meeks Show. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.